This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network on this Friday, February 1st. As we do every Friday at this time, we have two political commentators with us to discuss and debate the top stories in the news this week. From an emotional gun control hearing featuring former Senator Gabby Giffords to a heated confirmation hearing for Defense Secretary nominee Chuck Hagel. The president and a bipartisan group of senators released plans this week for comprehensive immigration reform. And state legislators want to strip the duty of publishing new laws from the Secretary of State. We will review these stories and many more, including issues in the news that you want to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us Ruth Conniff, political editor of The Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Morning.
And Kevin Bravinsky also joins us. He is a Binversi, a freelance political commentator. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Well, let's talk about the cabinet shuffle that is going on these days. Former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, President Obama's nominee to be the next defense secretary, took a grilling yesterday at his confirmation hearing. Let's take a listen to Senator John McCain asking him about his lack of support for the surge in Iraq.
Were you correct or incorrect when you said that the surge would be the most dangerous foreign policy blunder in this country since Vietnam? Were you correct or incorrect? Yes or no?
My reference to the surge being the most dangerous.
Are you going to answer the question, Senator Hagel? The question is, were you right or wrong? That's a pretty straightforward question.
Well,
I would like to answer whether you're right or wrong, and then you are free to elaborate.
Well, I'm not going to give you a yes or no answer
well,
on a lot of things.
Well, let the record show that
today.
You refuse to answer that question.
Well, Kevin, what do you think? How did Chuck Hagel do?
I've seen better prepared train wrecks.
Yeah.
To put it bluntly, I mean, he came off as completely avoiding many of the questions. It was strange to see senators such as Gillibrand from New York try to come to his rescue. And many times when he was just floundering on questions left and right, they say the president is entitled to the team he wants. But it's going to be interesting to see how this vote comes both down in committee and to the full Senate in probably the next week or so.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, what do you think?
I mean, I just think that John McCain grandstanding on the Iraq war has absolutely nothing to do with whether Chuck Hagel is qualified to lead the Defense Department, you know, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one thing is the American people do not think that, like John McCain thinks, that the Iraq war was where we should have put all of our energy and all of the American lives that we lost there. So just the fact that he's focusing so hard on punishing Hagel for parting ways with the Republicans and siding, quite frankly, with the majority of American voters on Iraq, it just doesn't mean anything politically. But more importantly, it's purely political because it has nothing to do with what he will actually do in leading the Department of Defense, right? He's not going to make policy. He's not going to choose which engagements we're involved in. And the Department of Defense is sufficiently bellicose that it can afford to have a leader who asks real questions about, and when he's advising the president, says, you know, what are we really doing there? So here's a very thoughtful man, a decorated Vietnam vet who has, you know, serious questions about American policy and has also served loyally and will absolutely do that as head of defense. He's attacked by his own party because he's one of the last of his breed of moderate Republicans. And I just don't think it means really anything in terms of his actual qualifications for the job. And I think that he will likely be confirmed. He dodged a lot of questions, though. I mean, I agree with Kevin there. He tried to get through the hearing just kind of paddling and not dealing with these confrontations. And, you know, I think that that's why people on both sides of the aisle were frustrated with his performance. But, again, they didn't even get to questions about how he would lead the department.
Yeah. So, Kevin, are the Republicans unfairly attacking Hagel?
No, I think there's some very legitimate questions about policy. I mean, he's said some things about when, you know, he's in terms of his stances on Israel, things like that. I mean, McCain and the surge, I mean, you wonder at times when much of Hagel's opposition to Iraq and Afghanistan, he didn't even say anything about Afghanistan much yesterday during that hearing, is about, you know, Hagel's own personal trauma that he suffered during Vietnam and all the things that went along with those lines. I mean, that's the other thing. You're going to have a, you know, I guess Vietnam survivor in charge of the Department of Defense, which is going to be intriguing for those who currently wear the uniform. The other realization, I mean, and this is just going off of his testimony or lack thereof yesterday, and just how he, you know, did come off as kind of a guy struggling against the current, which is amazing considering how many hearings like this he's been on the other side of that table for. You would think he would have been at least much more prepared. He, you know, almost said that, you know, the U.S. government accepts the government of Iran as legitimate, which has never been the policy since 1979 of any president, Republican or Democrat. And it was just a very strange hearing to watch. I mean, when he's getting, you know, taken back and forth between both sides going, you're not really answering my question, Senator. And just this whole just weird kabuki dance that's going to go through where you're having it dealing with more about is he buddy-buddy with Chuck Schumer in the back who's going to whip votes for him than does he actually know what the heck he's going to be doing at defense.
And do you think, though, Kevin, that he's still going to be confirmed or do you have your doubts?
I think if he gets through, it's going to be by the narrowest of margins.
Well, let's move on to another change in the cabinet. John Kerry, the new Secretary of State, said goodbye to his colleagues in the Senate this week. Kerry talked about the importance of listening and cooperation over his five terms in the upper house. Let's take a listen to some of Kerry's remarks.
8 years ago, I admit that I had a very different plan, slightly different anyway, to leave the Senate. But 61 million Americans voted that they wanted me to stay here with you. And so, staying here, I learned about humility. And I learned that sometimes the greatest lesson in life comes not from victory, but from dusting yourself off after a defeat and starting over when you get knocked down.
Ruth, any remarks on the mark that Kerry leaves on the Senate, and how do you think he'll do in his new job?
Well, I think that he will be a extremely well prepared and solid conventional Secretary of State, and you know I think in his remarks to the Senate he was pointing to something that a lot of people have pointed to, which is just the bitter partisan divide in Congress. And the need for people to be able to talk to each other, and of course, and he also pointed out the influence of money, which is just overwhelming our politics. So I think those were, really reasonable points that you often hear actually from people who are departing. I think that he is not exactly taking a bold and progressive stance in his confirmation hearings. I mean, he was approved overwhelmingly, and there was never any doubt that he would take over from Hillary Clinton. But, you know, he talked about eliminating nuclear weapons as a goal that could take hundreds of years to achieve. I mean, it's just not something that he hasn't taken any really bold progressive stances. So it's not a very exciting moment for people who are frankly quite inspired by Obama's second inaugural address and are hoping to see a real progressive posture in the administration.
And Kevin, any thoughts on Secretary of State Kerry?
I could say something about the global test, but why go back there? I think he'll be a competent Secretary of State. He's more than a qualified diplomat in many other fashions. I mean, the real question is going to be where does he lead America in the areas of foreign policy? I mean, does he, you know, continue this hardline stance, at least of this administration, when it comes to Iran? Building coalitions for various things if they do pop up in the global theater in the next, 4 years. I mean, you're going to, as Secretary of State, you're not just, a figurehead. You're literally the top diplomat of the country. You're trying to, you're the first, peacekeeper that, in essence, is always sent in, in any kind of, you know, situation. So I think in those circumstances, he'll be fine. I mean, he's always kind of secretly wanted the job for a number of years. He was always, you know, talked to be on the front lines initially for the first Obama term. So, you know, his naming confirmation isn't, you know, it's just kind of, you know, continuation of, I guess, you know, steady the course for the State Department for the next 4 years.
And truth, Kerry, you know, unlike Hagel, did not take a bold stand on the Iraq war. I mean, you know, interestingly, this Democrat who had no trouble at all getting confirmed was less, and also, you know, a Vietnam vet who ultimately questioned what America did in Vietnam. He still failed to take that really important stance, which now, through the lens of history, we see was the right one that Chuck Hagel took.
Meanwhile, Kerry is replacing Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I think today is her final day. She gave a final speech yesterday before the Council of Foreign Relations, and she stressed American leadership and the need to reshape diplomacy to meet the changing landscape of the world. Ruth, what do you think is Clinton's legacy?
I think that her legacy is that she's built a real strong resume for running for president in the next election. You know, she has been, I mean, she went out on kind of an odd note because the Republicans were so determined to make a big deal about statements about whether or not there was a, you know, terrorist-inspired or protest-inspired attack in Benghazi that killed Americans there. I thought she, earlier in the hearings that basically concluded her tenure, she dispatched that quite effectively. You know, I think she's been a very powerful and intelligent Secretary of State who has not made any real change to American policy. And I think Kerry will pick up where she left off. And she leaves now at a time, you know, of course, with the news this week about the Israeli bombing in Syria at a really dangerous time. She wasn't willing to talk about that at all yesterday, but there is, you know, we are facing some scary threats with basically loose weapons and, you know, just sort of the devolution of the Arab Spring into this, you know, sort of frighteningly chaotic and militarized situation that, you know, it's going to be a real challenge to take on. So we didn't really get to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, your thoughts on Hillary Clinton's legacy as Secretary of State?
I think the next few years will probably dictate what her legacy is, especially when it comes to the Middle East. I mean, you talk about the euphoria in 2009 about of the Arab Spring and the hope of actually seeing legitimate democracy take shape. And then you see nothing really from the State Department. Egypt is, you know, recollapsing into chaos. Libya has been said to be all but almost lost. So those are the things that will probably dictate whether or not she was a successful Secretary of State. I give her credit for a strong coalition in terms of getting sanctions against Iran. Lord knows we've needed that for years. But the Middle East is, I mean, it's just the reality of the gig more than anything, is that Secretary of State is often determined by how successful you were in dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the Middle East in general. That's why you have, you know, guys like Warren Christopher kind of given higher marks in recent years because of the early Clinton peace accords, which have now kind of been, you know, blown asunder by years later on. So, I mean, it's just going to be one of these things where history will judge whether or not, you know, she was not just a great Secretary of State, quote unquote, or just even a competent one.
Yeah. Any doubts if she'll run for president or not, Kevin?
Well, it's going to be intriguing to watch the field develop on both sides of the aisle for 2016, honestly. And I've been noticing this trend probably since even the middle of 2012, which is it's very likely you could have a much more younger and diverse Republican field than the Democratic field, which appears to be, at least for 2016, the group of old white men. Will she run? Yeah, I think she'll run, or at least, you know, put her foot in the water to test the temperature.
What young Republicans are going to be running?
You probably have Marco Rubio, definitely looked at it, Paul Ryan, heck, you even throw Scott Walker's name out there. I mean, of that era where you always have the 40, 50-year-old Democrat running versus the 50, 60-year-old Republican, it's going to probably be a flip dynamic because you'll have guys like Andy Cuomo, governor of New York, who's going to be in his late 50s to early 60s by then, Vice President Joe Biden, who's would be older than Ronald Reagan was when he first took the oath of office, if he, you know, were successful in seeking the presidency. That's what I'm talking about.
Marco Rubio versus Hillary Clinton, Ruth?
Could be. I mean, yeah, I think it's, you know, the Republicans are really going to have to figure out who they're putting forward and what their message is. And I think given the enormous trouble that they had in this last election with Latino voters and their atrophied stance on immigration, I think Rubio looks attractive to them just to try to make up that gap, because they cannot win, as McCain put it quite bluntly, with their, you know, the face that they're putting out to the world right now.
We'll talk about immigration reform and that issue coming up in just a bit during the week in review. But I also wanted to get you both to comment on White House Press Secretary Jay Carney this week saying President Obama has no desire to destroy the Republican Party, that he wants to work with members of both parties to get things done. There have been some rumbles in Washington, including from House Speaker John Boehner, that Obama's goal is to annihilate the GOP. Kevin, do you think President Obama has a sincere desire to work with the Republicans, or does he want to annihilate them?
I wouldn't go annihilate as the phraseology to go with it. I would say he definitely wants to see a Democratic House come 2014, because it's just, he's probably looking more at the political calendar of, if there's still a Republican House on January 3rd, 2015, that's the official clock when he becomes a lame duck. Because if he has a Democratic House in 2015, then he can, you know, try to push forward whatever he wants, especially depending on how the Senate turns out in 2014. So I think it's more along the lines of he's trying to either neuter the party, which, you know, given some actions of either of the butting heads going on inside the Republican Party, is helping him in that standpoint. But I think the realization is he's more doing more political calculus than political destruction.
What do you think, Ruth?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The Republicans are annihilating themselves. I mean, it's hilarious to me to hear Boehner come out and, you know, with self-pitying statement about how it's Obama's fault that they so overwhelmingly turned off Latino voters, women voters, that they are, after declaring in public, Mitch McConnell coming out and saying that their number one priority when Obama was elected was to see that he failed, that he lost the next election, and that he was unable to get anything done for the people of the United States. Now they're crying because Obama was reelected and people want him to get something done, and they are on the wrong side of history on issue after issue. So, I mean, they are feeling really sorry for themselves. They are getting in little circles and trying to, you know, they had this retreat in Virginia to talk about how they need to keep their mouths shut about rape because women don't like that, and McCain came out and said, you know, they have to change their immigration policy because Latinos can't stand them, and that's a very big segment of our population. You know, but this, none of this has anything to do with the president. The president is pushing forward with broadly popular programs and a progressive message, even more than the programs, quite frankly, that resonates with people, and they're trying to figure out how to get out from the wrong side of that.
Ruth Conniff is political editor of the Progressive magazine. Kevin Benversi is a freelance political commentator. Our two guests today for the Week in Review. Coming up, we'll talk about other news of the week, including a hearing about gun violence. We'll talk about the Milwaukee County Sheriff urging residents to defend themselves. And we'll also talk about those new immigration proposals. What do you want to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock. You can call in and talk about the story that touched you most this week, the most significant news story of the week, according to you. That's coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Your views on the news. This is our regular Friday Week in Review, when we talk with two guests from different political viewpoints about the top state, national, and international news of the week. And this week there was a hearing on gun control laws. Former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week to call for action to stop gun violence. This was the first congressional hearing on gun control since the deadly mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Let's take a listen to former Representative Giffords, herself a victim, of course, of gun violence.
Violence is a big problem. Too many children are dying. Too many children. We must do something.
And she asked Congress to do that now. Ruth Conniff, what action needs to be taken to reduce gun violence?
Well, I think the first thing that makes sense is the assault weapons ban and the ban on these, you know, high clip magazines where you can fire off multiple rounds. And, you know, that is absolutely sensible, as Mark Kelly, Gabby Gifford's husband, put it, a sensible middle of the road position favored by gun owners. You know, it does not take away people's right to carry a handgun for their own protection or keep a gun in their home. It doesn't take away any rights from sportsmen. It just takes away the ability of people to spray bullets and murder, you know, 20 children in a, you know, in a school setting. And I think, you know, Gabby Gifford's testimony was so moving, and that's where America is now. I mean, we are saying it just cannot be the case that we can't do anything about this, that we are going to endure as the price of this very extreme absolutist view of the Second Amendment. The price of that is going to be that we're going to permit these military-style assault weapons to float around and be used to murder people. It just, people just don't buy it. The other thing is, of course, universal background checks, closing the gun show loophole. 90% of Americans agree with that. You need a driver's license to drive a car because, you know, you could kill somebody with a car. The purpose of guns is to kill people. So, you know, why on earth wouldn't we do universal background checks and licensing and tighten those loopholes? And, you know, of course, as part of the expiration of the assault weapons ban, we had the gun lobby pushing through a limit on how much we could actually study the effectiveness of that. So now they can claim, well, it's not effective. You know, these guns are going to be floating out there anyway. And, you know, this is where I think in those hearings when we saw Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, trying to say that, and he was challenged, you know, that's just simply not true. You know, the point of these bans is to make it harder for criminals to get guns. Gun lobby likes to say only criminals will have guns. But, you know, you can make it harder. We really must do something, as Gabby Giffords put it so movingly.
Your thoughts, Kevin?
Well, I think the real interesting part is you're having an administration that's definitely using a tragedy to push a political point. But at the same time, they're also, you know, having very lax enforcement of gun laws. Comparison between the Obama administration and the Bush administration, this is about a 35% drop in federal gun prosecutions for those who have actually failed a background check. So that's always interesting. We say, they're like, well, let's just enhance the background checks. The problem is, you know, you can, but, you know, if you're not enforcing and double checking it in the scenarios, and then you bring up Newton, well, Adam Lasner, I believe, didn't go to a gun store because he would have failed a background check. He stole his mother's guns. And you talked about an assault weapon ban. Connecticut had one, and it still didn't exactly do anything to stop. And then, I mean, nothing against the tragedy that went against Gabby Giffords, but that was a madman who was hell-bent on killing her, which was just intriguing if you read some of the things that, you know, they've uncovered about him. So, I mean, the realization about all of this is I don't think you're going to see much action beyond a public hearing and a public scrutiny of the NRA. And Wayne LaPierre, frankly, is a guy who I would love to see take about, you know, 100 hours of PR courses just to, you know, get beyond his fiery rhetoric and the screaming and, you know, even, you know, yelling at the guys who agree with him. I've, you know, been in those scenarios where, you know, I'm watching him at a convention. I'm going, Wayne, I agree with you. Stop shouting, you know, and things like that. So, I mean, you're just, you know, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, magazine size, I think that will probably be the only thing that comes. We're probably going to see that shrink from the unlimited to probably 10, maybe 15. But in the realization in a mass shooting, you know, reloading takes, what, a second, 2 seconds, depending on the gun type. And, you know, the reality is we have to do something about mental health, which has never been addressed. But even, you know, sports leagues. The NFL is very lax. If you want to bring up the murder-suicide of the Kansas City Chiefs player. And, I mean, the reality is you have Harry Reid also in that U.S. Senate, who is very good friends with the NRA, who is probably never going to get anything that is even closely to what the Brady Foundation wants to get passed into law.
Yeah, let's move on to another gun issue here in Wisconsin. Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark released a radio spot urging residents to defend themselves instead of relying on police to arrive in time. Let's take a listen to this public service announcement.
I'm Sheriff David Clark, and I want to talk to you about something personal, your safety. It's no longer a spectator sport. I need you in the game. But are you ready? With officers laid off and furloughed, simply calling 911 and waiting is no longer your best option. You can beg for mercy from a violent criminal, hide under the bed, or you can fight back. But are you prepared? Consider taking a certified safety course in handling a firearm so you can defend yourself until we get there. You have a duty to protect yourself and your family. We're partners now. Can I count on you?
Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett said that was irresponsible. Kevin, was that irresponsible?
No, I thought it was common sense. I mean, what shocked me was suddenly all the detours that this was vigilantism. And I'm going, you know, I'm watching this. I'm like, funny, I don't actually recall Sheriff Clark saying, "I'm Jim Gordon. I need you to be my Batman." So, I mean, he's basically saying, guess what? The cops might not get there in time. And you need to do the responsible thing if you are being threatened in your home. And I know there's this story that was out there about some crazy lady who, last I checked, actually signed a Walker recall petition, so that kind of shows her personal politics, who went after her neighbor next door because of the noise ordinance. That's idiotic. That's stupid. That woman should be hauled off to jail. But no, I mean, if there is an intruder in your home, it's common sense to try to defend yourself. Either have a gun, have a baseball bat if necessary. Do what's needed to be necessary. That's all what Sheriff Clark was talking about. It's just gone to this point of this you know, over-exaggeration to its zenith, going, oh, my God, he's talking about vigilantism and, you know, guns, and it's irresponsible for a sheriff to say that. No, it's saying, guess what? Police have finite resources. They're being stretched even further in Milwaukee County because of a fight he's got between himself and the county board. That's the other thing that was missed off in the first part of his statement. And, you know, and not exactly been talked about. And this, you know, that you need to be prepared as a citizenry.
Yeah, well, this is just common sense, Ruth.
No, it's insane. And, you know, most Americans are not there. You know,
Let her finish,
you
Kevin.
Answer your filibuster. I'm going to talk now. The idea that we should arm everybody in sight, because if it just came down to an anarchic shootout, we'd all be safer, is completely wacko. And most law enforcement is not there. Officers do not want to be walking down the street where everybody is packing heat. And there is plenty of research about how guns in the home increase your risk of violent death. I mean, it is simply not the case that arming everyone in sight is going to make us safer. And people intuitively understand this. And that's why it was such an outrage when the NRA promoted the idea that, you know, your kid's teacher and the janitor and the cafeteria lady should have a gun. And that would be the proper answer to, you know, all these really outrageously high caliber weapons on the streets in our country. We have got to grow up. You know, the NRA, because gun manufacturers sit on its board, because there's a financial interest in continuing to sell guns and ammunition, make this argument that just defies common sense and defies public opinion. And we know perfectly well that it's not true that we all should pack guns. And, you know, this ridiculous grandstanding statement, part of the background of that is an argument over adequate resources for law enforcement. And, you know, the sense that in Milwaukee, you know, they're upset about budget cuts that have impacted their ability to respond. But, you know, you want trained professionals to respond. You do not want everyone on your block, you know, taking the law into their own hands. It's just a vision of anarchy.
Let me take a call, and I will give Kevin and Ruth again one last chance to respond to our caller, Tom in Columbus. Go ahead.
Good morning, and good morning to the guests. My wife and I are both hunters and shooters. We do support the second. We think that the mayor's statement maybe could have been, or I'm sorry, the sheriff's statement may have been able to have been worded a little differently, particularly in the media appearance on CNN. We wish that he would support mandatory background checks on all sales, which he failed to answer. But we took it as basically the same thing that a fire chief would tell you. Have an extinguisher, know how to use it. Protect yourself until help can get there. And, you know, it's because of the, obviously this is a political thing as well, as one of your guests have commented, you know, due to budget restraints. But I don't know. We think that it's kind of getting blown out of proportion, but I guess that's atypical. So.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom. Well, Tom sort of agrees with you, Kevin, agrees with the sentiment, thought it might be worded differently. But he also was disappointed that the sheriff didn't support universal background checks. What about that?
Well, I mean, the question around universal background checks is where do you draw the line between can you get it done without going to full registration of firearms? And that's the question that the NRA and those who are concerned about gun registration go to, because, you know, then you have scenarios such as that New York newspaper, you know, pretty much, you know, releasing all the gun owners' names, and now you're having people being robbed who have been on that list, or in the reverse, because either because they're targeted because they have a gun in the home, so then they can try to steal it and, you know, sell it on the black market, or they don't have a gun at home, and thus they're easy pickings. Back to Clark's thing, it's a self-defense thing. We have a right to self-defense in this country, which you would hope most people at least understand. That's what, again, the generalization of Clark's statement is.
It's really going a step further to say, you know, it's one thing to say we have a right to self-defense and that people have a right to have a gun in their home to protect themselves. It's another thing for the top law enforcement official in a local area to go on the radio and say, you have a duty to buy a gun. I want everybody to buy a gun. And not only that, you have a duty to fight crime with lethal weaponry yourself. And this is not the Wisconsin that most of us want to live in. You know, the whole idea that, and the Republicans have been pushing this in bill after bill, again, backed by the gun lobby with a financial interest in this, right? It is the idea of the castle doctrine of stand your ground. You know, we saw this tragic death of Trayvon Martin. You see the kinds of people who really take this to heart. Yeah, I'm going to be the guy that's going to, you know, take care of this. You know, this cowboy mentality. It is lethal. And it is, you know, leading to a level of violence in our society that is totally intolerable. And with the shooting of those little children in that school, a lot of people woke up. And this baloney claim that this is, oh, we're just politicizing something, you know, we wouldn't have had a big conversation about this, it's just the Democrats. No, people are, parents of children are seriously concerned about their kids' safety and saying, why on earth do we have a society with such lax restrictions on firearms that we let people wander around with crazy people with military-style assault weapons? Surely we can do something about that.
Yeah, another big issue this week, Monday and Tuesday of this week, were dominated by the issue of immigration. On Monday, a bipartisan group of senators came out with a proposal that would secure the border, allow more guest workers, require tougher verification measures by employers, and create a pathway to citizenship for the nation's 11 million, estimated 11 million illegal immigrants. Then the very next day, President Obama said he largely supported that plan, but he wants a more direct pathway to citizenship. He says he wants an immigration deal within 6 months. Ruth, first, are you behind this? Is this going to happen?
Well, first of all, I thought Obama's speech was extremely moving, and I thought, you know, he is really taking the high road, and he is the right person to do it. You know, when he says that anyone from anywhere can write the next chapter of our story, when he talks about how most of us used to be them, that we're a nation of immigrants, you know, he takes on the xenophobia of the anti-immigration movement, and he really speaks to the best part of America, and it is so hopeful and encouraging. You know, I just think he's the guy to do this and to take this on. And there's a reason why that's so inspiring for people. He got, you know, so much applause when he talked about the Dreamers. Of course, this was a critical part of the election, and it was really inspiring to a lot of voters, Latino voters, and also, you know, really all of us to think about having a more hopeful vision. David Brooks, Republican, has a column in the New York Times this morning talking about how the economics of immigration, it's not a drain on our country. In fact, immigrants work really hard. They're much more likely to start businesses. The non-immigrants, they contribute a great deal to our economy and have been really in a very untenable position for a very long time, and it's time to do something about it now. And it's really nice to see Obama use this early part of his second term, because he really does have to get going on his agenda if he's going to accomplish it, to take this on. So, I mean, I think all of that is really encouraging. And then, you know, we get to the details and we don't know yet. I mean, I thought that it was very moving when he called out Alan Aleman, who was in the audience, who was a Mexican-American who is going to he's planning to go to medical school. He's in college now. He was finally able to come out of the shadows, as the president described it, and become a U.S. citizen, and wants to join the Air Force. And, you know, to remember him when Republicans use this word amnesty that they like to use to sort of, you know, to basically say, you know, we don't want all these immigrants to become U.S. citizens and that this is somehow bad. Remember this guy and his story and how much it meant to him and how productive and contributing a member of society he is. So, you know, all of that is very encouraging. What's going to really happen? The president talked a lot. He bragged a lot about enforcement, which, in fact, has gone up on his watch. And I think, you know, on the broad issue of border enforcement, the Republicans want to tie any improvement in you know, creating a path to citizenship to achieving control of our borders, which means it may never happen, because that is a very, very tall order. You know, we have this huge border, and we have people who are desperate to get across it. So I don't think I think that that's a really big sticking point. They also want local control of enforcement, and, you know, the way that we set that up, which means that, you know, we could have some very, you know, we could have people like the sheriff down in the southern states, the sheriffs who have been extremely aggressive about some very ineffective vigilante-style enforcement. That's a concern. We don't know how long the waiting period is going to be. People currently can wait 20 years in line. We're talking about sending people to the back of the line. We need to actually speed up the time that it takes for people to achieve citizenship and also for their relatives to join them. So all of those details are going to mean a lot about what this really looks like. But I think broadly, just on taking on this issue and moving us into the future and having a more hopeful and, you know, true to our American spirit kind of message to the public, I think that was a really great moment, that presidential speech.
Right. Well, Kevin, Marco Rubio, among the Republicans coming forward with this bipartisan plan, is what do you think of this idea?
Well, again, I think the devil's in the details. I mean, and that's what's hidden from us at the moment. I mean, the real question is, you have a bipartisan group that's working in the House. You have a bipartisan group that's working in the Senate, which you would think then these guys could work on a compromise bill between the two. And then you have the White House coming in, hovering in, going, "This is what I want. If I don't get it, I'm going to cry foul and scream bloody murder." That's the question that a lot of people who are looking at this going, okay, what could happen when the White House gets involved? Because you have a too many cooks scenario there. I think the real question, you know, as you said, you talk about, you know, border security versus, you know, quote unquote amnesty. The real question is going to be, and I think this is going to be the real fight here, is, you know, you have all these people who are, you know, illegal, undocumented, call them what you wish. Where does the line start? I mean, how long can you say, I've been here for this many years? Why, you know, going through the legal process, I have a green card. I've been, you know, a student at, you know, wherever, and I've been waiting my turn, and suddenly somebody who jumped in, quote unquote, illegally or legally, you know, undocumented, suddenly gets, you know, ahead of me in line. That's going to be an issue that's going to have to be dealt with. And again, that's where these devils in the details scenarios. I believe Rubio has a very smart idea going for it. Part of it is obviously presidential aspirations. Part of it is his own personal history being of Cuban descent. I actually like his version of the DREAM Act much better than the Democratic version of the DREAM Act, because no one's ever actually explained, for those who support the DREAM Act, what being a good citizen applies. I've always been kind of a fan of, you know, kind of what the French Foreign Legion does. If you serve a term in the military, you get kind of jumped in line for immigration and thus you become a French citizen. You know, thus me, you know, doing that in America would actually make sense to me, because you've served the country, you've served the armed forces, instead of just, you know, versus the, oh, let's get a college degree thing, which frankly is very idiotic in most of these people who come over to the United States, then go back to their base countries and set up industry there, at, you know. So, again, devil's in the details.
All right. I got to jump in, Kevin. I'm sorry. We are going to continue with our week in review, taking a look at some of the top state issues in the news this week in just a moment. And it's time for our week in review quiz. Here's our quiz question for today. Super Bowl 47 is coming up this Sunday, pitting the San Francisco 49ers against the Baltimore Ravens. Some are calling this the Bro Bowl, as the two head coaches, Jim Harbaugh and of the Niners and John Harbaugh of the Ravens, are brothers. So what is the connection of the Harbaughs to Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. The winner of the quiz will get a book that we have featured on the program recently. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking with Ruth Conniff and Kevin Benversi, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review, time to review some issues in the news in the state of Wisconsin. Some Democratic lawmakers rolled out a package of bills yesterday that they say will quickly create jobs. It pulls two bills directly from Governor Walker's special session on jobs. Two of them deal with tax credits. The Democrats are also calling for state road and bridge projects to Buy American. Briefly, since we're almost out of time, Ruth, quick thoughts on whether these measures will lead to job growth in Wisconsin?
I think they could make a modest difference. There's absolutely nothing wrong with them. And mostly the Democrats are calling out Walker on his jobs pledge because he's not creating the jobs that he said that he would. And the Republicans haven't advanced. You know, they had a whole job session where all they did was try to restrict women's access to birth control and abortion. So, you know, they're pointing out that he's not actually doing anything on his signature issue, and they're making a couple of common sense proposals.
Yeah. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I think what's interesting about is a lot of these are also resurrections from ideas that when the Democrats had full control of state government and they didn't go anywhere there then either. I mean, the Buy American provision may very well be end up in a federal court, considering it will violate a huge number of international treaty laws. But as for Ruth's comment about the Walker jobs thing, I don't think any governor is seeing real economic growth under this economy. We just had the new jobs numbers come out, you know, hour and a half ago. So, I mean,
Wisconsin lags not just the nation, but the Midwest. So the whole idea that Walker's focus on jobs is getting us jobs is demonstrably false.
All right, well, let's talk about another issue that was in the news this week. There is a Republican bill, and the Senate passed it, that would strip the Secretary of State of the duty of publishing laws. Secretary of State Doug LaFollette says this is just political payback because he waited 10 days before publishing Act 10 back in the day. Does this change make sense to you, Kevin?
Frankly, this is one of these things that I've often been a fan of, eliminating both LaFollette and the state treasurer's office for the better part of a decade. So this is just a continuation of those efforts to get that done. If Doug wants to, you know, if the Secretary of State LaFollette wants to say there's a political payback, that's, you know, his ego speaking. I mean, he's going to have his defenders because he's been there forever, but frankly, no one ever takes him seriously. And, you know, up until, you know, this last November, he was the last remaining, you know, duly elected, you know, Democrat in the state other than Herb Cole and Tammy Baldwin.
Yeah, he's the only Democrat in state government. So what do the Republicans do? Forget about the jobs thing. You know, other than trying to pass this mining bill that's written by the mining company, they decide that they're going to take out after poor Doug LaFollette. And I agree with Senator Fred Risser, who said, you know, basically he's the only Democrat in state government, and they want to take him out. There's no reason to get rid of this provision. It's been there for a long, long time. It's a minor, minute check on our otherwise Walker and right-wing Republican-dominated state government, and it's just a power grab.
Is the Secretary of State suddenly a super governor when it determines when a law actually goes into effect?
It's got 10 days.
That's idiotic, though. That's idiotic. I'm sorry. The whole thing, you know, it's stupid.
The whole legislature has to get together and pass this law to attack this thing. I mean, it's just, they need complete control, you know. It's not enough to dominate the government. They need to squash the only elected official who puts a minute amount of time between their passage of the law and its publication.
We know that mining bill is going to go before the legislature next week for a vote. You have concerns about this, Ruth?
Oh, I mean, I'm not the only one who has concerns. And I think this is going to end up, you know, the tribes have a really intense case against us. I mean, it's the pollution, the seizure of their land. I think this is going to end up in federal court, and I think the tribes are going to win. But meanwhile, you know, the thing that this illustrates is that this company, GTAC, can come in and write legislation to benefit itself, and that, you know, Walker doesn't even pretend that's not the case. When the Democrats tried to come up with compromise legislation last session, he said, "Nah, I ran it by the mine owner, and he doesn't like it, so that's not going anywhere. It's got to be just how he wrote it." I mean, that's an amazing abdication of any sense that government has any role to play. I mean, we're just hanging a big for sale sign on our state.
Yeah. Should we be concerned that the mining company had so much to say about this bill, Kevin?
I guess if you're in Ruth's worldview, I suppose. I mean, the reality is lobbyists and industry help write many legislation. I mean, it's just the modern way of how bills become laws these days. I mean, only if you're, you know, think it's, you know, an uncommon practice. It happens on both sides of the aisle, so frankly, it doesn't really
concern me. Well, let's look at what they're writing a bill to do. They're writing a bill to eliminate environmental protections, to speed up the process, to get rid of public hearings on it, to build a massive open-pit mine in one of the most tourism-dependent and ecologically sensitive areas in our state. You know, it's really, I mean, this is the kind of stuff you'd kind of like the public to weigh in on and not just have it rammed through so that the mining company can profit from it.
And you're trying to tell me, let's bring up an idea from a previous conversation, that then there aren't unions involved in a Buy American provision? I mean, come on.
Okay. I mean, I Buy American. I think a lot of Americans do feel a patriotic commitment to support industry and workers in our own country. That is a little bit different from the GTAC mine profiting by running roughshod over our whole democratic process and our environment and removing any check on what he can do.
We have to leave it there because our time has gone. Congratulations to Marion Milwaukee, the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. The connection of the Harbaugh brothers with Wisconsin, their parents live in Mequon. Jack and Jackie Harbaugh will be watching their boys battle it out from the stands of the Superdome in New Orleans. They say they are not going to play favorites, but Dad says his thoughts will be with the one who experiences the agony of defeat on Sunday night. By the way, the brothers have coached against each other one other time in NFL history. It was on Thanksgiving Day. Well, Kevin, quickly, are you pulling for one team over the other in the Super Bowl?
Probably the Ravens, because the Niners beat the Packers, and frankly, Jim Harbaugh is just crazy.
And Ruth, are you even going to watch?
Yeah, we'll be watching for sure. My husband's a big football fan, and I'll be sitting there with him in the kids.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you. Have a good weekend.
All right. You too.
Ruth Conniff, political editor of the Progressive Magazine, and Kevin Benversi is a freelance political commentator. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program and for directing it. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.